South Sudan, North and South Sudan are quite different. So, well, Sudan used to be one country, and they split in 2012. South Sudan became a separate country, but the south of South Sudan is actually quite green and lush. They have a wet season and a dry season. They have mangoes. So there's a lot of greenery. So I was there in September in 2012, which was the start of the wet season. So it was quite wet and quite green and lots of trees and actually quite pretty. Yeah, definitely not a desert.
And so you said they split in 2012. So you were there that year. What was the political situation like? Was it tense?
Not compared to the second time I went in 2016, but at that time it was relatively peaceful. It's really really quite an interesting time. I remember on the side of a truck, I remember this marketing slogan says, every country has their own beer. I mean, that's just a given. No matter how poor it is, you've got beer. And one of the beer companies, the local South Sudanese beer companies, was already playing on the new nation thing. And they'd put a slogan on, I can't remember the exact words, but they put a slogan on the side of a truck that said, you know, this is the beginning of a new nation, drink our beer type of concept. And it was just like right in my face. And it was just like, wow, everyone in the world is like right into marketing in whatever level it is and making the most of any opportunity. And these guys were sort of thinking, we're in a new nation, a new beginning. Our beer's the best. Drink our beer.
Some things are the same the world over, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
You built entire self-contained power systems, put them into 40-foot shipping containers and shipped them over. What are the challenges involved with putting a power system in a shipping container and then transferring it to another country?
Yeah, like I said, when I spoke to Danny and said if I'd known what was going to be involved, I think we would have pulled the pin. That was definitely the case with the second project. We had two 20-foot shipping containers. One was 15 ton and the other one was about 10 ton. And the majority of the trip goes fairly smoothly, but it's just the last 1,000 kilometres through South Sudan that was really, really tricky. And it was in January of 2016. And this was right when the civil war started to break out again in South Sudan. And it was quite volatile at the time. And we had to make a decision whether to go or not. I remember being on holidays. It was this time of the year. And ringing backwards and forwards with my brother, who was coming with me, and also Danny from Melbourne, as to whether we go and whether it's safe to go and how we go about it. And the container hadn't quite got to site yet. It was on the border of Uganda and South Sudan, so it had made most of the way. And we thought we had to make a call because we had flights booked. Everything was all planned out, and obviously we'd worked our holidays out around it, and it was a fairly large commitment. And in the end, we decided we'd go, assuming that the containers would arrive on site. So we get over there on site. A few nervous moments as far as security goes, and sort of getting used to seeing a lot of people with guns around.
Immediately apparent as soon as you got off the plane?
In South Sudan it was, yeah, absolutely. Yep. It was quite tense, actually. I think one thing we had going for us is in Zara, where the hospital is actually right next to the military runway. So it wasn't for the public, but the military were there. So the Americans had a base there, and the UPDF, which is the Ugandan People's Defence Force, they had a presence in South Sudan as well at the time. And also the South Sudanese army were there. So it gave us a little bit of confidence that we were sort of a bit protected. But back to the container. So we got to site, containers hadn't arrived. They'd moved a little bit, they'd progressed a little bit further, but they'd been stopped because of the civil war. The the UN had blocked the roads because there were a lot of rebels on the roads at the time. So they stopped everything. And when we got into Anzara, all the shops were empty. You know, like I said before, you know, there was nothing in them, and it was because the roads were blocked. Nothing could get in. Supplies couldn't get in, including our containers. So we spent the next 4 weeks amongst doing preparation work and doing some other maintenance work around the site and keeping ourselves busy. Danny spent most of his time trying to negotiate with the United Nations to provide a UN a security convoy to get the to bring at least get our equipment in so that we could get this set up. And I tell you what, it's hard doing anything in these type of places, let alone negotiating things at that level. So we just kept battling at it and kept battling at it. They ended up moving the containers a bit further, and I think we got to within 600 kilometres of where we needed them. And they still weren't on site. And I actually had to leave. Like, I'd been there for 5 weeks, and I'd already stayed longer than I was planning to and extended my flights, and I had to leave. And actually, that's another whole story which I can tell you about after. But my brother ended up staying on and completing the project. The containers arrived actually a week after I left, and it was actually ended up being with a UN convoy. So they finally got on board. But it's the classic story with anything in Africa. Doesn't happen fast. You know, it's like, these guys are here now, we need to install it now. But no, this is Africa timed. Things happen when they happen, and they're not going to go any faster because you're here. And that was an absolute classic.
How long did it take to get, I guess, from the border of Uganda and South Sudan to the hospital versus how long it took to get to Australia to Africa?
Yeah, I think it took about the same time. So it's amazing actually how once a container leaves Australia, it actually doesn't take that long to get down the coast of Africa and then travelled by road up through to Uganda. I think it was actually about the same time. I think it was like 12 weeks by the time it left Launceston. Yeah, so it left Launceston. It took about 12 weeks to get to site. And I would say that 6 weeks of it, yeah, 6 weeks of it was stuck on the border into South Sudan. So it gives an idea. You know, and the other thing is to get an appreciation of how these containers travel. They're travelling on dirt tracks. They're not highways, you know. And these trucks, you know, if you've got a 15-ton, two containers, 25-ton of containers on a truck travelling up some of these fairly ordinary dirt tracks, there's so many things that could go wrong. Even just on the mechanical side, let alone the rebels and the, you know, coming out of the bush and ransacking it and stealing everything, you know. It seems like a fairy tale, but it's true, and it happens over there every day. Mm.